Welcome to Mind Frames, the sometimes half-assed but always wholehearted film conversation. We like to take one film, take a look at it through our two very different frames, and talk about one film, one theme. That's all you get. Sometimes we go offline, talk about other things. But what movie are we talking about today, Dave?
Well, today we're going to be talking about Dune 2, also known as Dune Part 2. Some people call it Tune. That tends to confuse it with the Bill Plimpton animated film, The Tune, which, of course, it is not. Neither is Dune animated, unless you mean computer graphic imagery type animations present in it. But
So Dune 2 is a continuation of Dune 1, surprise, or the Dune from what was it, 2022? I think I got that year right. It's also directed by Denis Villeneuve. And it follows the adventures of Paul. I don't know if adventures is the right word, but it follows the meteoric rise of Paul Atreides as he becomes a messianic figure to the Fremen of Arrakis, where we last saw him as stranded, if you recall, from Dune 1. Whether or not he is a real messiah or how much the manipulation should be tolerated that we see throughout the movie is a central conflict to the film and a central conflict for the character Paul, and it is the central discussion theme for our subject today. So, Dave, let's take it back to Dune 1, Dune 2. How do you think this ranks up to, first of all, are you a Villeneuve fan, and how do you think this compares to Dune 1?
I am a huge Denis Villeneuve fan. I've never seen Sicario. But I've seen Enemy several times. I've seen The Prisoners, or Prisoners, is what I believe it was called. Those are two non-science fiction films. And I'm a big, big fan of all the other films he's done. He has a style that deserves a palette this big. I'm thinking that this particular film is exactly, you know, what you get when you give Denis Villeneuve a lot of money and you leave him alone.
I think he's a great subject for our discussion because, you know, we like to do one theme, and his movies often have one big theme in them. Usually like a real big theme, like ecological decline, religion as a crux of political machinations, or communication. You mentioned Arrival, and he also kind of has that. He does have like so much attention to detail, and he just crafts worlds so great, and he crafts them around that one central theme. And I just want to say that Blade Runner 2049, criminally underrated. Have you seen that, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right when you say that world building is absolutely one of his like absolute core strengths. When you think of Denis Villeneuve, you just sink right into the world that he creates and emerge from it when the movie's over going, what, where am I? Blade Runner's a great example.
They're both thought-provoking and visually appealing. You know, I feel like he has a good balance of visual appeal and thought-provoking themes. You know, in Blade Runner 2049, you definitely, throughout every scene, you see the questions of technology and what it means to the transformation of humanity. Very similar, now that I think about them, or as I've been thinking about them, very similar to this film. You can see a lot of carryover from there, only switch, take out technology, although it's still a consideration for the Dune series. Take that out as the main thematic conversation, or replace it with religion or messianism specifically. And I think you can definitely see a through line between those two movies. I haven't seen Arrival though, so you're one up on me for there, but I loved the original Dune. I loved the original Dune from the 80s, as we know, but even more so, much more successful film, the Dune Part 1. And I loved Dune Part 2. And I think I'm a fanboy. What can I say?
You know, I saw the original Dune, and I probably told this on our Dune episode from the last time, but I'll go ahead and quickly tell it again. I had a friend named Kevin McInerney who was just eccentric as hell. And Kevin was a blast to hang around with. And we used to go to the movie theater that you could walk to from my house. But there was a blizzard one night. And it didn't matter. We wanted to go to the movies. And we thought, you know, we can make it. You know. And so we called the theater and we said, are you open? And they said, well, we will be if you're coming. And evidently, I found out that's how, at that time anyway, movie theaters work, was they actually had to run the film through the projector X number of times for the studio to be satisfied that the contract was, you know, being adhered to, that they had for running the film. So we wound up the only people in the entire huge town and country theater to see Dune that night. And it's such a weird, surreal movie anyway, that it was kind of the perfect movie to see in a situation like that. Just alone and empty. I mean, I guess I felt like the Baron, you know, any second I was going to just fly up into the rafters and start cackling. But here that's handled a little more subduedly, but yeah, that's a great memory that I have of it. And also a movie very much about world building. I don't know how else you would approach the material. I think we did do a lot of comparison last time between Dune and Dune, and we can't do that this time because
I don't think we have to do that. No, we could, and I do think there is one. There are some winks to the 1984 Dune in there. I think there are some winks to it, but I'm not 100% sure. We could, because, you know, the Dune 1 and Dune 2 make up the plot of the original 1984's Dune, but I feel like we did that. Maybe we can a little bit. Maybe that's a sign that this is actually a better film, that I don't want to do that, better than the Dune Part 1. But I love them both, and I think they're both kind of monumental achievements of filmmaking. So, like, the best special effects I've ever seen, I would put it above Mad Max Fury Road, which is considered by many to have, like, great special effects. I mean, the enormity of the spaces you can really feel in both Dunes. I kind of love it. Definitely better than Oppenheimer. I love Oppenheimer too, but I you know, Dune Part 1 swept the Oscars for technical awards when it came out, and I expect this Dune to kind of do the same. But we don't know what else is going to be coming out this year, but yeah. I think there's a chance that'll happen again. Greg Fraser is a cinematographer here. He was on the first movie as well. And, you know, somehow this was like filmed in Budapest. I don't know where the desert is in Hungary, but, you know, they had multiple locations. But, you know, they transformed. Like, Arrakis looks like no other place in the world.
You know, it's almost weird. You know, you almost want to compare Dune to Star Wars in that they're nothing alike, but they're supposed to take place in this sort of mythical landscape that we all kind of already have in our heads. And great, great science fiction that does take place in outer space on other planets, that's kind of its first order of business. If you can't do that, you know, you're in a world of hurt. And here you just get the state of the art. It's like, oh, this is where cinema is now. This is what's capable, huh? And it just makes you wonder how it can get much better. The production design in this film is mythic. It doesn't just create a world, it creates societies within that world, and more than one society, and you get a sense of how those societies run.
And, all right, and let's be fair here. George Lucas created the universe of Star Wars from his own brain with inspiration from various sources. But Dune is based on a book. So Denis Villeneuve had a lot of help, like he had something to base it off of. So I don't know if that's a fair comparison, because, you know, Denis Villeneuve had the structure from Dune, where George Lucas, you know, wrote Star Wars, created the Star Wars universe.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, you can also throw, if you want to throw in there, you can throw in Luc Besson. You know, there are various people who have done that, you know, sort of created worlds almost entirely out of their own heads, or Ridley Scott, you know. But of course, all of those people had these enormous pools of talent working with them and under them. And I think that, you know, it's just a reminder that it almost takes like a country to make a movie as big as Dune. It's just astonishing the number of incredibly, incredibly talented people that you can gather in one spot to get something done.
Yeah. So, the Insightful Nerd at insightfulnerd.com, unfortunately paywalled, but, he wrote that, this is our generation's Star Wars. And I think that this movie is getting a lot of claim along those lines, not necessarily always just Star Wars comparison. Sorry, hit a button there. But yeah, so it's getting a little bit of a. I guess you didn't like that, Dave. Didn't like that comparison. But Insightful Nerd said that it is inciting a level of passion and enthusiasm that hasn't been seen yet. That for this generation, for people who are under 30, I believe is what he's referring to. I'll take his word for it. I don't know. I think there is a lot of love for this movie out there, and people are really, and you kind of saw that with Barbie too. People are ready to love a movie. Their hearts are opened. I feel like people are burnout on Thanos. They're ready for something new and weird and different. And, I think movies like Barbie and Dune are kind of delivering on that. I think it looks good for the future.
I think it does too. Although, you know, it's important to remember that the popularity of movies and of types of movies and types of stories and types of characters, you know, is a reflection of where a culture is. And I think that, you know, it's a little scary. You know, we're in a very scary place as a country right now in the United States and even the world. And militarism, messiahism, all of those things loom very dark and very large. And I can easily see people who are really into the idea of Dune, of the war that's taking place in Dune, and some of the characters in Dune who are just downright vicious, and then being attracted to the movie at the same time that people who are attracted to the idea of a Paul Atreides and want there to be a single berserk solution to everything that involves, you know, huge, huge amounts of bloodshed. So
I don't know. I disagree. I disagree, to quote Uncut Gems. I think, well, one notable change they made in the film was they gave a devil's advocate voice. There's no devil's advocate in Dune the book, but in the film, Chani, it has doubts about Paul and does not like Paul's rise as a messianic figure. However, that being said, this is how I felt about the movie Joker. Like, you're kind of saying like, oh, people are rooting for the bad guy in a way that makes me feel uncomfortable. That's how I felt about Joker. But I think Dune did a pretty good job, in my opinion, of, even more so than the book, highlighting we're going to talk about it when we get to the religion theme, the religion discussion. But I think Dune is a pretty obviously cautionary tale. And I think if they make part three, which apparently they are, yeah, we're going to see even more underlining and the caution. of the cautionary tale phrase. Whereas I felt like Joker was like not as much. Well, and it's up for debate.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think that's a very interesting comparison. And at some point I'd love to get into that. But I do think that people don't always follow the lead or get the point that directors make in films. People make films their own. They just make arbitrary, they carry their own baggage into the seeing that, you know, is different than the baggage that the writer carries in, that the director carries in, that the cast carries in. And it's not so much that I think a movie like Dune incites. I don't worry about films inciting people, but I worry for our culture right now. And is it ready to receive Dune as the very obviously cautionary tale that it's making itself out to be?
I think they did the best job they could to make it clear. And the interesting thing about the plot of Dune so far, we don't know what's going to happen in part three, but whether Paul is a hero or a villain is not clear. There is kind of like no end judgment, as we've seen yet, of whether Paul is a hero or a villain. We have him getting revenge and getting things done and freeing the Fremen and bringing them life, a world that can support life, that the kind of life that they want, getting rid of their oppressors. But at the same time, we see him abusing power, manipulating people, pushing aside those that he loves. And I think it, yeah, like I said, I think he did a pretty good job of seeing those two sides. But I have that concern with some films. You know, The Norseman, I think, didn't leave enough breadcrumbs. Joker didn't need it. I love The Norseman, don't get me wrong, but I think, you know, white supremacists loved it because of its portrayal of a strong man getting revenge. The Joker the same way. It's like those movies, I don't think they did a good enough job of leaving breadcrumbs, or maybe they respected the intelligence of the viewer more to be my own devil advocate. But I think Dune very clearly, especially in the final half hour, is like, and I'll see it, think we'll see it in part three even more so, is going to, you know, underline that caution, but we'll see. Yeah. I don't know. I'll be interested to have a similar discussion when we talk about Civil War. And we'll see if people are going to take breadcrumbs in the and what I expect to be a cautionary tale with that film later this year, if you want to do it.
I'm all on board. The buzz on Civil War is phenomenal.
Looks good too. And, you know, I feel like Garland, you know, he gets a good one, then he falls off and he's in line for a good one.
Well, you and I disagree a little bit about Men.
I think you and the universe disagree about Men. No, Men has some great parts.
Well, you're just being a man. I think I watched it with a friend recently, and the thing about that movie that stood out was her at the end, having encountered all the different kinds of men there are, and all the problematic type of men that there are. And that there's a sense of ennui. There's a sense of like, well, this is where I'm at. I can't, there is no magical planet without men. So what do I do? And so I found a film, I continue to find it interesting, but I mean, you know, compared to Ex Machina or Annihilation, I mean.
Men was not well reviewed overall. I will say Men has great sound design, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm hoping that it is the Civil War is a less divisive film, but pun intended.
I'm sure that one will be the walk in the park.
But if it ends with a transforming Trump monster, I'm walking out, Dave. If it's like Trump and he transforms into Obama, I'm like, okay, I'm done.
I want Trump to repeatedly give birth to himself, you know, would be.
I think this might be the first time we've ever mentioned him on the show, and I'm ashamed that it came up.
I'm very sorry. The Baron. We were talking about the Baron, right?
So you ready to talk religion in Dune? That is Dune, the Dune Part 2 and Part 1, the movie we saw. Let's get into it. And there will be spoilers. We didn't talk about performances, but I think that's okay. You okay with that, Dave?
You know, the movie's great. The performances are great. It's great, okay? If you need us to tell you that Dune is great and that you'll enjoy it or not, if you hated Dune 1, you probably won't like Dune 2. But Dune 2, I think, ups the ante on Dune 1. And I don't know what else to say. Everybody in it is just perfectly cast.
All right, let's take a little break and give people a chance to go and watch Dune Part 2 if they haven't seen it. And that correctly placed transition element lets us know that we are now into the spoiler section, where we are going to talk about our big theme for the day. That is the portrayal of religion and messianism in Dune. Are you good with that phrasing of the theme, Dave, or you want to open it up?
I do think that's good.
And by Dune, we're talking about Dune Part 1 and Part 2. We might reference Dune 1984. We might reference the book Dune. We might even reference Children of Dune. Who knows? But we're mainly talking about the portrayal of Dune 1 and Dune 2, which I think is pretty much in line with the book. Not 100%, but Dune 1984 hardly touches on it in a formal way like these two films do. Let's get into it. So I guess why did I have that little preamble? It's for us and it's for you viewers. And you disagree, if you disagree, Dave, but yeah. Dune 1 and Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2 are their own work of art that stand alone, and we're not going to constantly intertextually refer to the Dune book as if it's canon, except for where it's helpful to clarify what Denis Villeneuve might have been thinking when creating it.
I don't know how else you approach this. I mean,
we're not a Star Wars podcast here where we're whipping out the books and
exactly.
Yeah.
It's too much. It's too much material. But it's also remarkably consistent.
Yeah, they carry the themes over. And I think, and I saw this online, people who are fans of the book saying that they kind of feel like it's an improvement in an updating. Things that would not have flown over very well today, for instance, the Baron is a homosexual pedophile in the book, and is portrayed as like a character flaw and a weakness, which it is. I'm not saying you should be a pedophile, but the homosexual aspect of it is not portrayed positively in the book. They completely remove that.
Right.
And I think I for many ways, it's an update. The women have much more important voices. Chani is really important as that devil's advocate, which I think is very helpful for clarifying the themes, the theme of, the cautionary theme of messianism. I think in a way it's an updating of the book. It is not like 100% straight retelling, but they're pretty close. Dune 1984 is just all over the map. We can't even, as much as I'd love to talk about its similarities with that, I'm just not as interested in that.
Well, the Baron in 1984, and I forget the name of that actor, a fantastic portrayal, is covered with pustules. You think probably has some sexually transmitted grotesque disease that he's gotten from all of his perversity. And very graphically, like you said, is abusing and killing young male figures. And in this movie, you do see the Baron satisfy his lust, but it's just handled differently, and it is
off screen, and it's not doesn't have that, yeah,
and it doesn't have quite the same pedophilic vibe. Like, these aren't necessarily kids that are being,
and I thought they were women, which is also a change.
Oh, were they women?
I could, but yeah, tell. if you read Dune, it has some homophobia that would not be acceptable today, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of weird is that 1984 Dune, he is like very flamboyant figure, and here he's almost like a slug.
Yeah.
You know, very, very different, kind of portrayal of evil.
All right. Just,
And not the only portrayal of evil that we see.
No, not at all.
Which is so interesting, because the Baron is such a great character, that you're almost sorry to see him go. When he does.
Yeah, he doesn't die till the end, though. He's right in the whole thing, pretty much.
Right, but probably not going to get much Baron in the third one unless they have some technology.
That would be interesting. They could go that route, but the sequels. The sequels get weird, so they could have Baron come back, but I don't think that's the route they're going to go. I'm very interested. I think they're going to go off the books. I do, which I think it'll be for the best. Anyway, religion in Dune. So I guess we talked a little bit about this off mic and after Dune Part 1. Both Dunes portray religion in a very... I would describe it as nuanced way. It is a central theme. It's a theme that's present in almost every scene. It is implicitly on the mind of multiple characters, all characters, I think, except for perhaps the Harkonnens, the villains. You know, it's on the minds of all of the characters associated with the protagonists. And I described it as a cautionary tale. So let's see if we agree on that big statement, Dave. Do you see Paul's rise as a overtly messianic? They call him Mahdi, which means Messiah in Arabic, or it's the word for the Messiah in Arabic. Do you see him as a cautionary tale, or how do you see Paul at the end of this film?
I think the film certainly hints at the idea that something has twisted Paul and he's no longer the innocent character. But he's still the character that seems to want some good things. He's not like the Baron, for instance, at all. You know, it's always an interesting thing when you talk about the idea of Messiah, right? Because there's what Dune means by Messiah. And here I am. I'll talk out of my own, you know, training in theology, and that is that within, say, the Judeo-Christian idea, right? You have the notion of God sending a Messiah. So God is supposed, God is assumed, and the Messiah comes from God. And here, I don't know if God is assumed or not. I think a certain type of goodness about the universe is assumed. And whether Paul... You know, it's funny, you know, remember the scene in Star Wars when Luke goes into the cave in Empire and cuts off Darth Vader's head, but it's him. And then he sees his own face in Darth Vader's mask. And he learns from that and he goes on to become the character that we see in Return of the Jedi. And I'm, of course, ignoring all the other sequels at this point in prequels. But... I'm curious, you know, that's the question, isn't it? Where's Paul? And what's Paul's relationship to the role of Messiah? As far as whether that role has been assigned to him by politicians and other people, and whether it's seen in the movie as just something that is... in and of itself a bad thing, that a Messiah is a bad thing because it's inevitably just a guy who's going to be manipulated. I don't know. And one of the characters that helps me with that is Stilgar. And I'm loath to write Stilgar's faith off because his faith is a faith of hope and the big picture and looking beyond the borders of what is to the borders of what could be. And he's an interesting character. He's juxtaposed against Paul in that way, because we never doubt that Stilgar is a good man, but now we're starting to doubt if Paul is.
I don't know what to take from your comments. I don't think there's an answer I think maybe there is an answer. Paul is the Messiah to the Fremen. But he is that, I don't think, but circling back on the God question, I don't think there is a God in the Dune universe. I don't get the idea, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
They believe that in fate and destiny, and then they kind of worship the worms, the Fremen at least. And as far as the people out off of Arrakis, like Gurney has, you know, he quotes from his Bible, but it's more of like a list of rules than a relationship with a being, it seems like. And the Bene Gesserit, they are kind of a religious order, but they don't believe in anything except for to attain power. They want to attain power and they want to push forward humanity's evolution, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so I think, you know, within that framework, Paul is the Messiah to the Fremen, but he is also the genetically manipulated political machinations of his family and the Bene Gesserit. He's kind of both. And I think that is the question of Dune. That is like, what happens when you tie up this religious fervor with political struggle, with political desires? Yeah. And I would like to, at this moment, read a quote I read from Denis Villeneuve. Where I came from, religion and politics were blended. Quebec. The church had tremendous power over the population in Quebec until there was something called the Quiet Revolution in the 1960s. So he, you know, if you know anything about the Quiet Revolution in Quebec, well, it was basically the Roman Catholic Church controlled Quebec until the 60s, and people were like, well, let's have, you know, the French Canadian identity got separated a little bit from the Catholic identity, to the point to where they could have different political expressions. And I think that, well, he said it himself, but it seems that that was one of the things that sparked the interest in him doing a Dune, you know, an adaptation of Dune.
Right.
And as far as, I don't know who said it, but I think the message of Dune, the closest thing I can get out of a message of Dune, besides you throw gasoline on a fire and it blows up, is not that absolute power corrupts absolutely, but that the corruptible are attracted to absolute power. And I forget who quoted that. I forget where I heard that quote, but it's very complicated, and it's kind of it defies the notion of there being one answer, because Paul is that Messiah, and his ability to predict the future ultimately probably will lead to like the next evolution in humanity. But he came up to that, and the entire concept of that existing is through human and political maneuvering. And is Stilgar a fool? I mean, no, he's not a fool. He's believing in something that's true and real and is going to result into the thing he wants, Arrakis that has water on it. If we are, you know, we see Paul have a dream that he sees his sister by an ocean. I interpret that to mean Arrakis will have water someday. So he believes in something that's true and real, but he's not as aware of the political. He is being manipulated by the political side, well, as they all are.
Well, yeah,
everyone except for Paul.
Villeneuve goes on in that quote to say, "Politics is about nuances and compromise and trying to find solutions together, instead of the absolute black and white of go to hell or paradise." And I think, again, you know, the thing for me, as you know, I was deep in my theological studies, was this immense deconstruction of that black and white perception that I had of theology, which is not a perception of theology that huge portions of the Christian church have, and huge portions of the Muslim faith and Jews have.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean. Could you give some examples of what you mean?
Yeah, you know, this business of religion in the public sphere right now is it's very difficult to talk about religion without invoking an idea of extremism. We think of the news, we think of Trumpism, we think of, you know, again, this idea of paradise or hell, and that there's no in between. But the reality is, for people who study theology outside of the very narrow conservative understanding, that, you know, Trumpism and everything has fostered and turned evangelicalism into, is you have a lot more ambivalence about what faith is, how it works, what it's for, and the ways that it is meant to function in our lives. And it isn't militaristic. It isn't, you know, in fact, it's the opposite. It's not based on, an idea of a coming cataclysmic war. It's based on the very nature of what it means to be in relationship to one another and to God. And so you don't get that in Dune, but then again, I don't think that's what Frank Herbert was talking about. Frank Herbert was reacting to the very negative sort of politics of Messiah-ism. And certainly Villeneuve is not off base in seeing that as a topic that's germane for today. But it's like you said, like, you know, there doesn't seem to be a God present in the Dune universe that Villeneuve has conjured. And I think you're right. But I do think that there is something very right about the rejection of really what has been the dominant understanding, you know, sort of conservative, over the top, patriarchal, in your face, I run the show type of approach to religion that most people end up thinking of, because when you say religion, you know, 40 years ago, it was Jerry Falwell, and it was the religious right, and it was all the hot button issues, and now it's even worse, and nobody talks about the other kind of religion at all.
So I think we maybe you've come around to, since we last talked, and you're more in line with what I was thinking. In Dune 1 and 2, do you think Denis Villeneuve sees all religious practices as threatening and should be excluded from political discourse and politics? Or do you think that, I think there are some positive portrayals of religion, but, you know, we heard his quote and it's definitely does, you know, is a kind of a cautionary tale of mixing politics and religion. Do you think he's completely against religion and politics, or even completely against religion in this film?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's funny. I don't think he's completely against religion in its in its proper place, which is not to say, you know, religion is this wild animal that we need to hold at bay, but religion is only useful to politics insofar as it can be part of the process of creating nuance and compromise to find solutions together. And there are approaches to religion that allow for that, but
are they in the movie?
but nobody that has any power in the religious world any direct, you know, political agency on a par with, you know, the Baron or the, you know, the Ben Gesserit or whoever, is trying to do anything other than get power themselves. The characters that use power in a more, or use religion in a more positive way, I think like Stilgar is a person like that to me. I think that some of the people who control some of the things in the temple are like that. I think there is an idea of the separation of faith and religion. But in the world of Dune, I'm hard put to find an institution I trust. And religion seems to be a thing of institutions rather than faith at some point.
I think the movie is pretty anti-religion. Not entirely. It's definitely anti-religious institution. And we talked about how Chani, her character is uplifted a little bit from other adaptations. Like we talked about 1984. I don't even know if she hardly speaks in that film. And she has some scenes where she, like I said, she's the devil's advocate to Paul. She's not a believer. You know, she kind of mocks the religious practices. And I kind of feel like she was set up as an alternative to like an alternative type of liberation, a secular non-religious liberation to Paul's messianic liberation. But at the same time, I can't 100% say that it's anti-religion, because the scenes of religion and the meaning of the religion of the people in the film are portrayed very sympathetically. And the scenes of religious practices are very portrayed beautifully. So, you know, this is kind of what we talked about off mic. And it's like, I don't know if Denis Villeneuve is like an admirer of religion, or if he actually believes that it can be a force for good. But one way or the other, I think there was admiration. Like Stilgar is an admirable character. Now, if Denis Villeneuve was here, would he think Stilgar is kind of faulted for following Paul with his religious beliefs? I don't know. That's the question I don't know the answer to. But he definitely considers Stilgar a respectable and admirable person. So I don't know, but I do feel like the elevation of Chani as like a secular Paul, you know, a secular resistance to Paul. I don't know if she'll stay that way in part three, but I feel like he was kind of proposing a non-religious alternative to it. But I don't know. I think the complexity of the question kind of interests me more than having a definitive answer, I think.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I mean, I think Chani is interesting too, because at the end we have her and Paul, you know, male and female. And we have two very different ideas about how things are going to get done and how things should get done. And I think a thing that interests me about that is that, you know, again, if you get into the theological world and like if you study African theology at all, you get very quickly into the concept of Ubuntu, which roughly translated is something like, I am not me without you. as I remember it. And I think that this business, you know, you use the phrase religion as a force. I think, you know, in African theology, that would be a very foreign idea, that religion is a force that you, you know, go at society with or go at people with. And so this business of perhaps Chani is a way of Vianu attempting to set up a third option, if you will, than pacifism and use of force, or, you know, or a more feminist centric view of power and the use of power and force than Paul seems to be trapped in. But time is going to have to tell. You don't know. It's just that you know, we have been trained so much in our Western society to look at religion as a political weapon that I think it's very difficult not to default into that in our thinking as we think about what religion is or what religion is for anyway.
Well, I mean, Dune is a movie directed by a white man based on a book that is based on, you know, Western philosophy written in the West. It's not surprising that it would. And the interesting thing about Dune is it pays homage to so much of human history and religious practices. There are Islamic, Zen Buddhist, Jewish, Christian. They all have references in Dune. The world of Dune is a menage of all those things, and ones that I can't remember, I'm sure. I kind of saw Chani as like a alternative, more like of a secular liberation.
Because we all are trying to imagine. I mean, I think that's the thing that sort of speaks back to how we started talking about Dune, is that I'm curious, is Vianu going to imagine a new way? Because there are a lot of people out there trying to do that.
All right.
And that is, you know, hey, a welcome voice. I welcome voices.
I think that is the opposite of what we're going to see. And if I want to peer into my crystal ball, I think in part three, the sister will take over. Maybe Timothy Chalamet's character, Paul, dies. I don't know. Or falls into the background, and the sister will take over, and it will be a bloodbath. And, the cautionary tale message will be hammered home about mixing religion and politics. I kind of have a heads up on that because I've read Dune Messiah, which is based on, but I'm going to reread it. I actually just bought it again. But I think they're going to really change the plot. I don't think you're going to get a lot of that. I think they're going to change the plot a lot, but I think ultimately it's going to come down on the side of Paul was wrong. But we don't know. Right now people love Dune, and then the books after it, they don't love as much. The great thing about Dune is that question is kind of not answered. So, but I think they're going to answer that question, and the question is going to be holy war, which, by the way, in the book Dune is called Jihad. They didn't have the balls, as we call it. We said in the first one to call it, use the word Jihad. They used holy war, but right. The holy war is going to be bloody and reveal the dangers of having a messianic figure lead your empire. But I could be wrong. I think it'd be a huge dramatic shift in tone for like Paul to become like a Buddhist monk and start advocating peace and understanding. But hey, it could happen. Maybe at the end, end, he returns.
I was imagining something more along the lines of Chani.
They could be setting her up for that role. Yeah.
not to be a new messiah, but to somehow embody another movement, another way of doing things, and that ends up supplanting Paul in some way, or at least supplanting the direction that he's taken. I mean, you know, a movie.
He says she comes around, though, in this movie. You know, Paul says she'll come around, and it's like, oh, because he can see the future. So in theory, that's going to happen, but maybe he's wrong. But she is being kind of, like I saw, she was kind of being set up. She goes off on her own. She is the only person in the whole film that challenges Paul that is not a direct adversary. Love the question. I love the question, and I think it's a smart question. I love the ending. We're in the spoiler zone. And I think if anything, it makes me more certain that it's going to be a bloodbath and part three and the cautionary tale hammered home is that ending where Paul sadly says, go kill them in the name of me. Or I'm sorry. He says, bring them paradise. But what he means is chop off the head of anyone who doesn't think like us.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that is the prevailing political fantasy these days. at least in terms of the discourse that we see on social media, I think that this, you know, Dune reminded me of something, Dune 1 and 2, and that is that, like theology, like philosophy, movies are a way to talk about things and to share ideas and insights and emotional and psychological touchstones with each other. And they are not singularities. In other words, theology isn't about learning why this is right and here are all the things that tell you that it's right and anything that isn't those things is wrong. In fact, it's the opposite of that. It's merely defining the few things that we feel like we can know and then seeing what springs up when we build patterns of thought or institutionality or, some form of a polity around that. And it's forever shifting and growing and changing and being lived into. And, you know, look at Dune. That's what Dune's doing. I mean, when did Dune come out? It was in the 60s, right?
I think so, yeah.
So for
68, maybe?
For 60 years, we've been toying around with these characters and thinking about them and asking what they signify. And that's what they're for. And it isn't that we all have to have the same interpretation or the same idea about them.
No, I mean, why would we even have this podcast? Yeah. It would just be me telling you what it means, which we could do that, but. And, you know, within reason, I think most things can be interpreted pretty widely. It's like if we had someone on the show who was like, Dune is a positive portrayal of messianism, I would be totally open to hearing that case because you can definitely make that case. Paul, you know, Chani doesn't get anything done. Paul gets the planet liberated. So I would be interested to hear that. And I definitely don't see it that way. But, I would love to have different interpretations of it. It's a fascinating, fascinating world and a beautiful movie. Would it be okay if we talk about a different type of messiah?
Well, I just wanted to say this one last thing, and that is that the thing about separating out religion from politics in this film is you really get the idea of watching Dune, and I mean any version of Dune there's ever been, that the world of politics is a dark, dangerous, ultimately bloody arena. And there is nothing that religion is going to bring to that that doesn't result in corrupting religion. But even if you believe that religion can be brought to that somehow, and you want to believe that Paul Atreides somehow is this positive figure, he is a positive figure like all leaders, all, you know, this is why presidents' hairs go gray in 4 short years. Because people are dying all the time as a result of decisions they've made. And yeah, it's powerful stuff. And you know, it's there's a really good case I think to be made, particularly as we look at now, you know, what the mix of politics and religion has done in our own country. But yeah. What kind of Messiah did you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, is Dune the savior of movies? Woo-hoo! Are we seeing a rebirth of people going back to the movie theater and getting excited and getting the hype about the popcorn bucket? You knew we were going to mention it. I wasn't going to leave you hungry for that popcorn bucket. Do you think people are getting excited about the movies again, Dave? And by people, I mean besides 50-year-old critics.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? You know, I just saw an article that said that most people would rather stream movies from home and than go out to a theater. And let the pundits argue about that. I, at the age of 58, right, I have a different relationship with movies than I did when I was 20. I don't run out or want to run out and see everything. But I think that as a culture, we are, you know, one of the great things about movies right now is there are a lot more showings in theaters of classic films. You know, AMC has done this. There's all sorts of, you know, you go to like the Music Boxes here in town, it's selling out screenings of you know, ancient films. They're doing a Godzilla marathon, and they're going to have panels at it and everything else, and they're going to sell out. It's a like something like 12 movies, and they're going to sell them out.
All right, but let's step it back.
So
we're talking about Dune. We're talking about people going to the movies.
But I think the answer is yes, but a qualified yes, because I think Hollywood's notion of that happening is that they make billions and billions of dollars. And I would like to extend the middle finger to all the studios that have that paltry a vision of what movies are to people. And it was the guy who he won his Oscar. I forget what for. I think it was the American Fiction. He was the guy who wrote American Fiction and won for screenplay. And he basically said, look, all movies are a risk. You can take a $200 million risk, or you can do 20 $10 million risks. And I don't think a truer thing was said at the Academy Awards this year.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think it's to be seen. We'll see what's coming out this year and see if they get big people to show up and they can generate buzz around products around them. Certainly successful with Barbie, Oppenheimer, the Dunes. We'll see if people are going back to the movie theaters in mass, especially younger people. I don't know if that's another unanswered question. Well, I think we could wrap this up, Dave.
No, I think there's one other unanswered question.
Yes.
And that is, how many emergency room visits in the United States because of that popcorn bucket?
You mean because of the cholesterol and fat of the AMC?
No, of it getting stuck on various body parts.
What do you mean? Like your hand? What are you talking about?
If you don't know what I'm talking about, folks, go look up the SNL sketch about the Dune popcorn bucket. And that's all I'll say about that.
All right. Well, we don't really know what movie we're going to do next. We haven't even talked about it, nor have we reacted to the Oscars. Maybe we should just do like a half an hour Oscar reaction.
That's
great. And that might be next. That might be, I don't know if that'll get a number. I don't know if that'll be a full episode or just a special release for our Patreon subscribers. We're just kidding. We're free. We don't charge you money yet. But if you do want to listen to us for free, you know, we're on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. Rest in peace, that service that we were on that died. What was the name of that? It was around forever. Maybe Last FM. I don't think we're on Last FM, but we should be. And of course, you can always find us on the Now Playing Network, where Jim has not been keeping us up to date, but that's partially our fault too. But we will shame him publicly here and remind him to update our stuff. And we've got new episodes. We're getting out of our caves. It's just like Mind Frames is kind of like we're kind of like Poxifani Phil, you know. We hibernate for January and February, and if we see a good movie in March, that means 6 more months of sequels. I don't know. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time with some movie.